All right. Well, let me start again, all right?
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. I just realized I forgot to hit the record button, so this is the do-over of the intro. It's Eric here with my friend Will from the Weekend Homestead. Garden Fork is an eclectic mix of DIY and maker and cooking gardening. And Will was in the middle of talking and I realized I forgot to hit the record button. So we're back.
The best stuff on the internet is now lost to the ether forever.
Yeah. So Will has a YouTube channel called The Weekend Homestead. And we were just talking about how he's doing some live streaming. And I was curious how that was working. And he had just started talking and I interrupted him. So...
No worries. The short of it is YouTube's normally like you're working in a vacuum where, you know, you post a video and then you wait for a response from everybody. So there's always a delay between it. With live streaming, you have live people there watching you interacting. So I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I covered a whole bunch of different topics like the DIY project we're working on, our apple orchard, some of the problems we had. And as I'm talking about these different things, people can send us messages and you can read them on the screen so they can interact with you. So they'll be like, oh, so what were you using the tractor for? Or, hey, how does this work? So it adds a whole new dynamic to the YouTube experience. I kind of use it as the accessory to the videos, but I find myself doing more impromptu live streams from different kind of cool locations like diners or restaurants or different places that we stop on our journeys as we're going to our place.
Well, yeah, I saw you did a double one of fishing with your son, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, we have this nice little fishing hole near our where we live, and just set up the camera. And if you have the YouTube app, you can just press a button and it'll set up a live stream. So we're sitting there fishing and, you know, just kind of talking about whatever. And it works out really well. I had the double because the app, unfortunately, is in beta still. So it crashed halfway through. So that's why you had two of them.
Well, it works.
Yeah, the funny thing about live is you just never know where it's going to go. So there's always that little bit of, I don't want to say anxiety, but anticipation of trying to figure out what questions are people going to ask and where's the topic going to go. And you start talking about one thing and the next thing you know, you're on three other things.
And people dial in to watch, huh?
Yeah, I get you know, anywhere from a small handful, a couple dozen people to, I think my largest live stream had 140 people or so, which if you think about it, standing in front of 140 people live and talking is kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like you standing in your underwear in front of a bunch of people.
Yeah. So I just live stream in my underwear and it works great. Camera cuts you off at the waist, you know, so it's okay.
A lot of people that work from home, I have friends and I'll call them or text them and I'm like, have you gotten dressed yet? And they're like, maybe not, you know, because they'd stumble out of bed and just walk over to the computer and turn it on. So
one of the best comments that I heard from somebody who was talking about working from home was you have to get in the rhythm of waking up in the morning and taking a shower and getting dressed like you're going to the office. But yeah. The thing is you don't have to get dressed like you're going to the office. Just go through that function like you're getting dressed to go to the office. But it doesn't matter. You could be putting on shorts and flip-flops if you need to or whatever to be comfortable. But that kind of triggers you from the I'm in the sleep mode to now I'm going to the work mode. But you don't always have to get, you know, in the suit and tie and all that kind of stuff. Just dress comfortably at the house.
Yeah, I actually I have to get up and walk the dogs. So that helps. And I've learned that I am most productive in the morning. So I don't look at email. I don't look at YouTube. I just start writing or editing the first thing. And I get a lot more work done there. And I've been trying to write more blog posts for the site. So if you guys subscribe to my email newsletter, if you go to any page on gardenfork.tv, there's a sign up or send an email to news@gardenfork.tv. And I've been sending out an email every week about stuff I've written on the site. And it's kind of fun because it's stuff that, and maybe you're like this too, Will, where I want to do something, but it's not quite worth doing a video about, but like, oh, I fixed an outlet and I just wanted to write about that. So
Oh, we do that all the time, actually. My outlet for that, I haven't gotten around to setting up the website. This is really, I'm now kind of anniversarying the first year of doing the social media thing. And we finally got Instagram up and running, and I do YouTube, and we have some stuff on Facebook. But I find Facebook and Instagram to be kind of my, I don't want to say lazy man's version of everything, but to shoot a little 30-second video of something or write something up really short and take a picture of it, I tend to use those two mediums because you're right. There's projects where, yeah, you could do a step-by-step, but it'd be faster just to take a picture and people would get what you're doing.
Yeah. And I just, I don't know. I found that I like writing and it's a heck of a lot easier than editing video.
I agree. I'd say the same thing for me, but my writing is atrocious. So, you'd be spending a lot of time editing.
I'm told that my writing is atrocious, but I do it anyway.
Oh, I think you write some great stuff. I've read a bunch of the articles you have, especially in the Garden Fork group and things like that, where you post that stuff in there, and it's, you know, it's great stuff.
Hey, shameless plug here. You might want to start following me on Instagram, because on June 10th, this will be posted on June 9th, we're doing a giveaway of a Troy-built battery-powered string trimmer, and Will, you cannot participate.
it's so funny that you bring that up, because we were just talking about replacing. We have a Black & Decker one that's like 3 or 4 years old, and I'm like, yeah, I should talk to Eric about that one that he had. Maybe he could find out where they sell them and give me some info on it.
They're $250, maybe $230. I can't remember. And it's this. They have a Troy Built, who's a Garden Fork sponsor. Full disclosure. They bought a company that makes this motor, electric battery-powered motor called the Core, they call it. And it's this new design that I still can't wrap my head around. It like the circuit board is what spins around. And it's very efficient with battery use. And they sent me one last year and I've been using it. And I'm all about using less gas-powered stuff, even though I have a garage full of it. And the battery is really good too. A lot of these... The battery technology has gotten so much better now with rechargeable batteries that they don't crap out after a year, you know?
That is one thing. I mean, I feel bad. I've recycled the batteries we've had, but we looked at the one that we had from Black & Decker, and I've gone through a battery probably about every season and a half or so, because you use it and then it sits around for a long time and you don't use it. And then all of a sudden you dig it back out to use it and it's there and it's not reliable. And that's a real frustrating thing when you want to go do a project. And don't get me wrong, I like buying cheap stuff. I'm, you know, a cheap guy. But at the same point, when it comes to tools and things like that, if you have to rely on something, it's always nice to, one, take care of it, and two, get something that's high quality so that it lasts a long time and it's reliable for you.
Yeah. So if you're interested in a string trimmer, follow me on Instagram. I'm Garden Fork. And then you will also need to follow Troy Built on Instagram. And basically, they do a random lottery from comments on a particular post, which will be on June 10th. So there you go. All right. So Will, you posted a number of videos on your YouTube channel about being up in your woods and you found this hole in the ground.
Yes, the hole in the ground. Actually, by far, probably one of the most followed controversies. Actually, I even got, you know, people were wildly speculating what the hole in the ground was.
Well, you played it up too.
A little bit. Yeah. We had 5,500 comments, and interactions on Facebook within probably about 72 hours of posting, and everything from holy cow, Jimmy Hoffa's in there to, Al Capone's hideout. You know, it's a cistern where they're making booze to, you know, it's just a hole in the ground. What are you trying to scam me? You know, there was the whole gamut of people. People were saying I was Geraldo Rivera, you know, unlocking the secrets of Al Capone's safe, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. I actually, that was a comment that was made, and I had to look it up to see what it was because I didn't know what it was at first.
Oh, I do. but I just intrigued because, you know, we walk around the woods and I see what they're called. We call them cellar holes, but they're the outlines of old buildings with stone foundations. You know, they're called rubble wall stone foundations. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to bring my metal detector here and see what's in there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I did play it up a little bit, but I will have to say that there was some truth to it, which is there was a wood piece that had some concrete on the top of it, and it was just too heavy to lift up, and I couldn't really see down in there. And then to top it all off, I was putting my GoPro down in there to try to get some video, and I dropped it into the hole. So then we had to make it a rescue mission to get my camera back. But our property is actually I've gotten the abstract from it all the way back to 1893, and I've seen all the owners and all the people and all the buildings and everything that have been on it since 1893. And there's a cabin that's still standing on our property from 1917. Well, on the other side of the property, there's a small foundation like you're talking about. And then very close to this, there was this hole in the ground that we just happened to come across. You know, trees have grown up over the years, so, you know, you wouldn't necessarily find it. And all of a sudden we start digging in and figure out, you know, what it was.
So did you figure out what it was actually?
We think we have it narrowed down to two things. Either it's a well, if you've ever seen those stone-lined wells where, you know, they go down to the bottom and they draw water from it, because there is water standing in the bottom of, yep, of it. I can't tell if it's runoff or if it's the groundwater. And then, or the second item is an old-fashioned septic tank. So older homes used to have just a tank, and then the material would just kind of leach into the ground, and then when it was full, they'd dig another one. I guess that's right, kind of how the technology was back in the day. I don't know if this was an old one. The thing is, it was really clean inside, and there was nothing in it except for sand in the bottom, which makes us think it's a well more than a septic.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just kind of cool to go walk around your property or go explore places and find things and then go back and dig into the history to figure out exactly what it was.
In my backyard in Brooklyn here, I planted at the back wall with the back fence, I planted some pine trees. They're called arborvitaes, I think, that grow kind of tall and fast and wide. And while I was digging, I hit this piece of cement or brownstone, and underneath it, it sounded hollow. And I'm like, I don't have time right now. I have to get these plants in the ground. But at some point, I want to go back there. And because some of the houses, when they were built, did not have plumbing in them yet, or sometimes they had outhouses in the back. So I think where I live was developed when they had, where they had plumbing. But I'm curious as to what this hollow thing is in the back. It could just be a junk pile. So
sometimes that happens. You get into something, you're thinking, oh, I've just found the coolest thing, and it ends up being, you know, the rim from a tire or something like that. And you're like, oh, that, you know. But then you also ask yourself, how long has it been there, and what was it for, and how did it get there? And, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm waxing nostalgia a little too much on that stuff. But I find it interesting, you know, to find out who owned the property and what they did with it and things like that. Because, you know, like even in your area, a lot of stuff is really historical, and people find stuff all the time that's really interesting and fascinating and a good link to the past.
People find human bones here, actually, because not my, when the neighborhood I used to live in, which is Park Slope along 3rd Street, was a Revolutionary War battle.
Wow.
It's called the Battle of Long Island. And it actually, the fog saved the American troops, and otherwise we might be speaking British English right now. So
wow, interesting. Yeah.
But there are these undocumented burial plots where they buried troops that were killed, and they're now homes. So when people are digging in their basement or their backyard, sometimes they run across soldiers. Interesting.
Finish off this topic for a second. I do have a new project that I am working on. So the original owners of the property mailed me a package in the mail. And when they were working on the 1917 cabin years and years ago, they found an envelope that had a number of letters in it. There's about 60 of them in there.
Oh, wow.
And they're very, very brittle. Some of them are dated from as old as 1911 all the way up to 1938. And they're all written in German. And I scanned a couple of them in, and I posted them on a translation website, and I had somebody volunteer, and they actually translated one of the letters. And it's a story of this woman being in a hospital in Germany and going through in 1938, August 16, 1938, she goes through the hospital, and she's talking about how her friends are doctors there and people are poor, and talking about how everything is. So it's kind of intriguing and piqued my interest. So now I'm going to try to get the other ones converted to kind of learn the story and the history of these people moving to the property and what it was like in 1917 in Wisconsin, you know?
Neat. Wisconsin has a huge German population. So
definitely. Yep.
Wow. All right. So we're going to totally switch gears and go in the tech world here. And I'm intrigued about this. You wanted to talk about the Google router.
The Google router. So remember a couple of weeks ago, we had talked on a different show about security on the internet and updating your router.
Yep.
And doing all that stuff. And I talked about how great my router was and everything. Well, very shortly after that, my router stopped working. So I kind of was in the mode of, I need to get something new. And I started reading some articles about this new Google router that came out. And I thought, well, I'll give it a try. And they have two versions of it. It's a little bit more expensive than a regular router, but I'm actually really glad that I ended up purchasing it because it's revolutionized how we use the internet in the house. But it comes with either a one single puck or three pucks. And basically what these pucks do, they're about the size of a coffee cup. And you plug it in, the first one into where your internet is, and you turn on an app on your phone, and literally you press three buttons on your phone and you have a fully secure Wi-Fi network set up in your house that's very strong. You can do all sorts of tech stuff. I mean, it was the easiest. And when I say the easiest to set up. But when it was done, it said, hey, go to another part of your house and plug a second puck in and then press a button on the app when it's ready. You do that and that second puck calls back to the first one and goes, oh yeah, I got your internet right here. And then it starts rebroadcasting from that point. Then they say, go find another spot in your house and put it in, or put one outside or something like that. And what it's doing is making what's called a mesh network, which, to put your propeller hat on for a second, a mesh network is a number of Wi-Fi points that are all talking with each other to make one large network.
Right. So you don't have to log in the different Wi-Fis around your house. It's just seamless.
Absolutely. And the thing is in the past, it was very difficult to do this. You had to be a very tech savvy person. Now it's as easy as you plug a thing into the wall, press a couple buttons on an app, and then you move to the next point. And it's even smart enough to tell you where you're located or, oh, you're a little too far away, please move closer, those types of things. But now I can get Wi-Fi in my backyard. Our signal strength is 100% throughout our house. My speed at my house has actually gone up by probably about 20%. I can monitor how much usage I have. It's fully secure. I can give guest access to people. I can prioritize devices in my house. And it's all done through an app on the phone. And I know that a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to have Google have all my information. Quite honestly, once you go on your computer, Google's going to have your information if you're using their search engine. So I looked at it as they've developed this really cool technology that's super easy to use. And I've been recommending it to people. And everyone I've recommended it to so far, one, loves it, and two, never calls me again about tech stuff.
Yeah, and we will link in the show notes here to the one, the particular one that the model that we're talking about, because they have a couple different ones here, but it's well reviewed. And I have the Apple routers, and they are rock solid, but they are not cheap. And this might be a good competitor to that, because the Apple ones I've never had a problem with, but I think Google would make something pretty darn bulletproof. And I'm big on the security thing, but I'm pretty much, Google knows a lot about me because they own YouTube, and I run their apps. So, and I think they're probably a little more robust about security than some of the other companies that are tracking you night and day. So,
yeah. Well, the other thing that's kind of neat about it is that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about cutting the cord, and I've seen a couple articles and people posting. This product is targeted towards those people because you can take your television and say, I watch Netflix primarily on this television, and it senses, hey, someone's firing up a Netflix usage on that certain device, and it will kind of air traffic control the internet to that device to make sure that you get the best viewing experience. Because if I'm reading a blog and I'm not using a lot of internet versus your TV, which could be using a lot of internet, routers historically just kind of gave internet equally to everything in the house. Now you can prioritize stuff and say, hey, the kids' iPads shouldn't be working after 8 p.m. or
I was just going to ask that. Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. So you can actually even give allowances. So like if Cameron is good, I can give him allowance for another certain amount of credit. And when he logs into the router, it will allow him to use it for that amount of time. And then it takes the internet away. So helps parents too, which is kind of cool.
Excellent. All right. Well, we will link to that in the show notes there. Wow. I just learned something. And the other one, I wanted to ask you about drones because you're my drone expert, but there's a new one coming out?
There is, and I'm really excited about it. The one issue with drones is they've been historically expensive, and the inexpensive ones have been very poor quality. Well, DJI on June 15th is going to change all that. And by the way, I don't work for DJI. I don't get anything from DJI or anything like that, but I've been a fan of their drones for a long time. I've used them in my videos and just flown them recreationally. But they're coming out with a new one called the Spark. And the most important thing about the Spark is the price point at $499. So you're getting DJI quality, which is one of the top brand names out there, in an inexpensive price for the first time. Before, it used to be $700, $800, $900, $1,500 for a drone. At $499, you get a drone that will be run through your phone, so that's your controller. It'll fly up to 300 feet up in the air. It'll record. It records in HD 1080p. It's got great speed and control. It's got obstacle avoidance, so if it's your first time flying, it'll help you avoid things to the front and to the bottom so you don't crash it as easily. I mean, it's a really cool deal, but the biggest note is the price point, $499.
And we'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, there's part of me that is like, oh, I'd really like to have one of those.
Well, that's what everybody says, like, oh, I'd really like to have one, but they're really expensive, or they buy an inexpensive one and then they have a really bad experience. And from all the reviews that I've seen on this thing, from the different demo days that they've done and things like that, it's a really cool product. The nice thing is it's got pretty good battery life too, 16 minutes on a single charge. And I think it only takes like a half hour to recharge it. So you can take it out, use it for 16 minutes and then put it back on the charger. And, you know, within the hour, you're back up in the air again, you know, doing more video. And for most casual people, you're not flying a quarter mile away. I mean, a lot of people ask, you know, how you use your drone. And quite honestly, most of the video that I'm shooting or doing with it is within eyesight, so it's not like, yeah, I'm flying super distances away.
There's some trees I need to drop, and it would be fun to have overhead footage of that.
Yeah, you can actually, the drone itself is smart enough to kind of know where it's flying, so you can set it in a point. And I've done this before, where you set it in a point and you press a button on the screen that says follow me, and then as you move, the drone moves. So I'm like driving in the gate or through the property, and all of a sudden you see the drone following, or there's video following it, and people are like, well, how are you running the drone and driving at the same time? I put the drone on autopilot and have it follow the way. I'm pretty confident DJI will have similar features to that in this new inexpensive drone too.
Could it follow me in the woods? I mean, because if I was driving the quad, like there's these trees I got to drop in the woods and I'm going to take a trail to go there. I don't want it like 10. I don't want it 20 feet in the air. I need it maybe 8 feet in the air following me. Could I do that?
How open of a space is it?
It's like 12 feet wide.
You probably should be okay flying through there. I am going to go on record to say I probably wouldn't recommend it because you could damage it. But yeah, on the other side of it, you know, I've flown it through the woods. It kind of takes a little bit. Like once you get comfortable flying it in an open area and doing a couple things with it, you know, kind of continue to step up your game. You know, I've seen guys get a drone and then first thing they post is I crashed it. I'm like, well, what were you doing? I'm like, oh, I flew over this area and I zipped through here and wherever. I'm like, well, did you practice a little bit out in an area? Well, no, I just took it out of the box and used it. I'm like, well, that's why it crashed. So,
all right. So I have to get one.
June 15th, they come in 5 colors. So you could get like a Troy built red, or you could get a white one, or you could get whatever, you know, and I just think it's fun because it's going to open it up to a lot more people using them. Hopefully they use them responsibly. I mean, we talk about that all the time, but use your drone responsibly, because otherwise they're going to continue to crack down on them for anybody doing bonehead moves with them.
Hey, watch this.
Yeah. Hold my beer. Watch this.
So you and I both are starting to experiment with growing mushrooms.
Yes. The gentleman, Clean Slate Farms, I'm trying to think, Dave from Clean Slate Farms. Yeah. You guys talked about it, the plugs and stuff like that. And I ended up getting 2 different kits and trying 2 different things out. So it's been good. We've had great mushrooms so far.
I just ordered the plugs, which look like they're dowels used for furniture making, and they've been inoculated with the mushroom spore. And my neighbor is having his forest logged. So there's a bunch of birch and white oak and red oak and cherry and maple out there that I could just go get, which is why I want to have the drone. You know, it could follow me and cutting up the log pieces. And I thought I'd cut like 3-foot long logs, and they have to be about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and bring them back. And I was just going to put them in the backwoods. I mean, does that work, you think, or
Yeah, everything I've read on them, some of them say that logs have to be vertical. Some of them say make sure they're 8 inches in diameter. Some say you can have the smaller ones. Which mushrooms did you end up getting?
The oysters.
That's the same ones I got, the pearl oyster mushrooms. And we're going to cut down. I've got some trees that are kind of in a bad spot, and one of them's a birch tree, and we're going to take it out this weekend, and I was going to cut them, same thing, into manageable lengths where you can pick them up, because you don't want to hurt your back or anything like that, yeah. You know, lifting and moving this stuff. But you drill holes in it and you hammer the plugs in, and then you take wax and you cover them up. And then what I read online was, if you know a spot on your property or somewhere around your house that is currently growing mushrooms, most likely other mushrooms will grow where other mushrooms are.
All right.
So like, we have a patch of woods right by the house that there's always mushrooms on the trees and on the ground and things like that. So I'm just going to put a pallet out there and then set the logs on top of the pallet and just see what happens.
Yeah. It sounds like, from reading online, that sometimes it happens like magically overnight and sometimes it takes a year. What has been your experience?
At this point, we're in the waiting pattern. I did one log last weekend and we didn't have anything from it. I'm guessing what'll happen is, it seems like the spring and the fall are the two seasons for oyster mushrooms, at least where we are.
Yep.
So I'm guessing through the heat of the summer, we're not going to have anything. And then one day, magically in the fall, everybody's going to be like, come look, come look, come look. And there'll be a whole bunch of them on there. At least that's what I hope happens.
Yeah, we've so far I've had good rain in our area. So I'm hoping for a flush of oyster mushrooms to come out soon. And what's really great is, not many people in my town realize you can eat them. So I just drive along the road and there'll be like a flush of oysters on an oak or something. And I just pull over and gently cut them off. I leave some so that the spore will be re-released. But,
well, we've grown a second type of mushroom too on our property now. Over the winter, my wife got us a kit from, it's like River Valley Ranch, I think is what it is, or River Garden Ranch. And basically it's a box that shows up. You open it up and there's two bags inside of it and some instructions. And you peel the plastic back, you kind of scratch up the dirt that's in there, and then you mix this other material in that's inoculated into it. Then you get it wet and you put it in a closet somewhere in your house. And so for us, since we were gone on the weekdays, we did it on a Sunday, put it in the closet. When we came back the next week, there was nothing there. And we were really disappointed. I'm like, oh, I thought there'd be this huge mushrooms overtaking the house. The following weekend, when we came up, we opened up the closet and surprise, we had probably 20 or 30 button mushrooms that had grown up inside of this kind of box of material. We harvested those. The next week we came up, we had another 50 of them. Wow. And they just keep coming. And it's like, holy cow, what are we going to do with these? So we dehydrated some of them and we made salads and steaks and, you know, did all the normal stuff. But they grow the white button mushrooms just like you get in the store. And if you let them get bigger, you can cut the tops off them and use them on burgers and things like that. And it was a really easy kit. Like Cameron and I, Cameron's 5, just got the kit out, had him get in the dirt and mix it all up and have fun with it. And then we just put it away. And at first, when it didn't go the first week, and I was super disappointed, I'm like, oh man, we got a bad batch. And then the next weekend, when all of a sudden it came up, it was the first thing everybody ran in the house to go check is what's going on with the box of mushrooms. We got 3 or 4 harvests out of it, and then it kind of went dormant. So we'll see if it does it again. But super easy to do. Anybody can do it.
Neat. And we'll link in the show notes to the supplier there that worked out really well. Yeah, I'm intrigued. And also my friend Kenny from the website Veggie Garden Tips, he's big into mushrooms to the point that he's culturing the spore. Is that right? He's like to the petri dish kind of mode now.
Wow.
Know? And he has renovated part of his basement to be his mycology lab. And I'm like, I got to get him back on the show to talk about it. But when I saw him in Savannah with Troy Bilt, he was, I was very intrigued. I was kind of hoping he would offer to send me some spore if he's listening. That's a big hint, Kenny. So
you'll have to see if he's doing morel mushrooms, because that's the mother of all mushrooms that everybody is after all the time. And I've tried a couple of the morel kits and I've had no luck with them so far. But I know that that's something that people are starting to get into.
You know, the morels do not grow in my area in Connecticut, but right across the New York border, which I'm very near the New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut border there where they all join. The soil type changes and they grow much more ubiquitously, is that the word? They grow a lot more over on the New York side of the border, which is interesting. But then when you go, when you drive over there, you know, we're kind of like these rolling hills, and then you hit the New York border and the elevation changes quite a bit. We go up quite a bit. It's interesting. And all of a sudden it's just bigger hills. It's the bottom of the Berkshires. So if anyone's listening that knows about that area, but kind of interesting.
Do you get the same, like there was a letter that came out from the Department of Natural Resources that recommended for people when they go out on properties to harvest responsibly. I know that there was some different things that the Minnesota and Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources were putting out saying, hey, if you're out collecting ramps or you're collecting mushrooms or you're collecting wild flowers or edibles or anything like that, you know, don't mow down all of them out there, you know, be responsible when collecting them. I know that's been kind of a big push around here.
That's good, because you killed a giant thing of ramps, didn't you?
I didn't kill it. It was an accidental find that we were putting in an ATV trail through the property so I could get to another part. And when we went through this area with the machine cuts a 6-foot wide path. When he was done cutting it, we were standing there talking. And I'm like, man, it really smells like Olive Garden right here. You know, it smells like garlic. And we couldn't figure it out. And I didn't know what a wild ramp was. And then you happened to have some post or somebody had some commentary about wild edibles and things like that. And I'm like, I bet you that's what it was. So we went back and I picked some of them. Come to find out that I have a patch of wild ramps that's probably 30 feet wide by 50 feet long on the property that I didn't even know was there. Now, granted, 6 feet of it's gone, but
it'll grow back.
It'll grow back, but it was kind of interesting. They're like, we're trying to figure out why the machine smells like garlic really strong, and that's what it was. We mowed down a 6-foot wide patch of ramps, and it smells awesome there. We call it the Italian Trail because it just smells, you know, like Italian food when you go through there.
That's great. I mean, they're very slow growing. They will grow back, but it'll take forever. But you've got your own private ramp patch now, which will feed a family just fine.
We keep it hidden. We don't tell anybody where it is, but it's pretty cool when I went out there. I'm like, wow, I didn't know we could do something with this. And it's like that discovery mode where if you go out to the state forest or you go out to anywhere and kind of explore your surroundings, you can find things that are really neat. And it doesn't really cost that much, or it doesn't take very much to get involved with it. You just have to kind of know what you're getting into and do a little research. And then all of a sudden you find something like this, and now we have a whole new thing that we're going to try.
Yeah, cool. I've gone off on my ramp tirade before, but I think they're over harvested. You know, it does certainly help farmers in the early part of the season, but you'll see them at farmers markets and I'm like, where'd you get those? You know, because there is a ramp patch near me that is in a state forest, and it's just, I watch it disappear. It's slowly disappearing every year because people just stop in their cars and they just keep pulling from it. And I'm like, you got to let this thing grow, you know?
So. Yeah, there was actually one of the articles that the DNR in Wisconsin was linking to is an article where they were talking about in some cities and in some states now they're making it where you can only harvest so many plants a year and so on, because people were going out into the woods and they'd go rip just bundles and bundles and bundles of this stuff out of the ground, and it doesn't regrow very fast. And then they go sell them to restaurants in town or whatever, where they have, you know, wild ramps on the menu. And, you know, they were doing this, and now they've kind of put some things in place to help prevent that. And it's caused the population to go back up on the plants. But in some of these areas there, people were wiping them out completely because they didn't understand that you can't take them all. Same thing with mushrooms. You never take them all. You leave a couple there to propagate the next batch.
Yeah. All right. So that's enough moralizing from Eric. So I think people are at their destination. And I have to edit some videos because I haven't edited any videos this week.
I don't have any videos to edit this week because we shot a whole bunch of stuff on Memorial weekend, and I found out afterwards that the mic had failed. So I have about 18 gigs of video that's just me lip syncing.
Wow. You know, I shot some stuff with the iPad, which is really nice. It makes it very easy. My sister helped me, but we kind of learned as we went. It was kind of seat of the pants, and I didn't have a separate microphone. But some of the time when you're holding the iPad, you can actually cover the iPad microphone with your hand while you're holding it to shoot the video. And so it sounds like this. Yeah. But I'm going to use it anyway with subtitles. So
there you go. Perfect.
If you want to make videos, use what you got. The iPad is actually has a really amazing camera in it. So that's nice.
I think Rick said it once, the best camera to use is the one you have in your hand.
Yeah. There you go. Spoken from a diehard listener.
I was in the car a lot and I had to listen to all the shows because they had to have something to do when you're spending 200 days working on a project and half of it's driving back and forth.
Yeah.
You got a lot of time to listen to Garden Fork.
Yeah. All right. So Will, they can find, where can they find you now? Where can people find you?
We have an Instagram account. So The Weekend Homestead on Instagram. The missus actually is the one who manages that, putting photos of our projects and things like that on there. And then on YouTube, The Weekend Homestead. And if you subscribe, you'll get a notification when I go live if you want to be part of one of those live chats like we talked about in the beginning.
The next time you go fishing. Cool. All right, everyone. Any comments or questions? It's news. No, radio. Radio at gardenfork.tv. And then we will link to all the different things we talked about in the show notes here. And if you're listening on your smartphone, if you just tap on the icon of the show notes should show up in a perfect world. So... All right. Thank you, sir.
Have a great day.
Garden Fork's theme music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.